Hey everyone, I'm Coach Al Lyman.
And I'm Dr. Kurt Strecker, and we are the experts behind Pursuit Athletic Performance, one of the nation's cutting-edge sports training companies with an outstanding reputation for getting athletes just like you stronger, more powerful, and faster, all while keeping you uninjured and in the game year after year.
Our weekly podcast will share honest, effective training tips and information, from the nuances of triathlon to the rigors of ultra running, as well as the latest in sports medicine and nutrition. Our goal is to explode the training myths and untruths marketed to athletes and to teach you how to truly unleash your ultimate potential. Be sure to subscribe for free updates of our proven strategies at pursuitathleticperformance.com.
Hi, everybody. I'm Coach Al Lyman from Pursuit Athletic Performance. Thank you so much for joining me on this new edition of the Pursuit Athletic Performance podcast. I hope you're having a great day out there. I'm really excited to spend some time with you today, and I've got a really special guest on the podcast today. This is a very, very good friend of mine and a truly wonderful triathlon coach who I've had the pleasure of knowing for a number of years. He's agreed to come on to our podcast today to talk about a very unique system that he and his partner have developed. So I want to introduce all of you to Will Karousis. Will, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing very well, Al. Thank you very much for the glowing introduction. I'm a little nervous now that I'm not going to be able to live up to that billing. But
oh, no worries, man. I say that about everybody that comes on the podcast. I want to say up front, and you know, when you reach my age, Will, as you know, you can be honest with people. I mean, you know, I really feel like you and Jason, and I'll certainly give you an opportunity to talk about Try Hard Sports Conditioning and what you guys actually do. But I really believe that you guys are truly two of the best triathlon coaches in the business. Certainly anyone out there that's listening, that's looking for some coaching services, of course they can come see me and my partner, Dr. Strecker, here at Pursuit Athletic Performance, but you guys offer some of the most valuable, science-based, smart, efficient training systems of any coach that I know. And as you know, Will, I mean, you know, in this day and age, it's now 2014, it seems like there's more triathlon coaches out there than there are, you know, rocks on the ground. I mean, the sport's growing and it's you know, the amount of coaches out there is really exploding. And I think guys like, you know, you and your partner, Jason, really help to bring, our entire, you know, coaching business, if you will, back to a really grounded level, and help people see the value of being in the sport for a while. You guys have been doing this for a lot of years, and you got a lot of experience in that regard. Before we get on and speak a little bit about the topic that I brought you on today to talk about TryHard a little bit. I mean, share with our listeners what you guys actually do, how long you've been in business, and what's going on.
Well, so we've been coaching as our company TryHard since late 1999. And you know, when we first started out, it was sort of a funny deal where I had been coaching a bit on my own and sort of funding my early 20s and mid 20s. And when I decided to get married, you know, it was one of those moments of I guess I need a quote unquote real job now. And so I put that sports science degree to use and started working in a clinical research facility. And it just so happened to be on my first day on the job that I was being showed around by this gentleman, Jason. And we, you know, both being triathletes at the time and endurance athletes in general, hit it off. And, you know, we sort of joke that our evil plan was hatched probably about noontime that first day on the job when we were sitting down having lunch outside on the steps and said, you know, it'd be pretty cool to get back to doing this coaching thing. I think there's some way we can actually make a living doing that. And so from there, we just progressed forward, and our initial mindset, and really the mindset that's carried us through to this point, is that we feel like performing well in sport shouldn't just be about the next race. It should be about where you are 20 and 30 years from now, and trying to be the healthiest human being that you can possibly be and have a positive life and a really good relationship with sport. You know, have sport be a part of your life that brings you up and that helps you feel better about who you are and live better, be healthier, as opposed to sport being kind of a negative in somebody's life where it's like, you know, my entire self-worth is based on what I just did in my last race or in my last workout. I mean, that's a pretty rough spot to be in, but it's a spot that regrettably a lot of people can fall into. So we've really viewed that as our focal point over the years that, you know, we want to be about helping people be well and be healthier and use sport as a conduit to that. So, you know, that includes physical development, mental development, the whole kit and caboodle, so to speak. So that's really, you know, that's really what we've tried to do over the years, and it's evolved certainly, you know, how we've approached it. You know, early on when we first started, you know, we mostly were working with endurance athletes, but occasionally we would do something essentially like consult in and act as the conditioning coaches for a collegiate sport team, or we actually did a lot of stuff with martial arts early on, with developing conditioning programs for martial artists, you know, and even combine kind of stuff. And it came down to, you know, you start getting busier within a field and there's a part of that field you really enjoy. You want to be able to focus on that and really zoom in on that. And so for us, it really became endurance sports in general. And the way we break things up between the two of us is that, you know, Jason has a fairly extensive distance running background. He's really accomplished in that realm before he kind of morphed into a triathlete. And I was more of a cyclist, mountain bike racer, cyclocrosser before sliding into multi-sport racing. So for the two of us, you know, it's almost like I tend to work with mostly triathletes and people involved in some realm of cycling. Jason tends to be more triathletes in some realm of running. And occasionally we'll get a weirdo. And I say that intentionally, hoping, because a gentleman that I coach who's a motocross enduro racer, loves listening to podcasts. So I'll have to forward him this link. And I say that intentionally because I know he'll get a kick out of it.
Right, for sure.
But, yeah. So, you know, overall it's really been, you know, that's the focus. It's about trying to help people be better and be well and live really good lives and have a really good relationship with yeah. sport. So,
you know, that's awesome, and it can't be understated. You know, it's funny. Well, I introduced you originally as a triathlon coach, and, you know, it's funny, as I think back on it, you and I and Jason really have been sort of connected from the first time that we met each other, because we're all really comfortable, or at least spend some time in that strength and conditioning world as well as in the endurance sports world, and we realize the value of movement-based training, of appropriate strength, building the frame, if you will. So we've had that in common, and certainly, you know, and I can tell all of our listeners, many of whom don't know you like I do, that when you talk about developing and using sport as a conduit to a better life, to a happier life, to a more fulfilling life, you're really speaking from the heart, because that's the kind of person you are. And our sport needs more people like you and Jason, and I think we're doing the same kind of work here, or trying to, at Pursuit Athletic Performance. You know,
totally, man, totally. Yeah. And you're right. I think the strength and conditioning part of it was something that caused the three of us to have a friendship pretty quickly. But I think what has allowed us all to stay in, you know, in good contact and really enjoy working with each other a few times over the years, and just having some good friendly banter back and forth and sort of pushing the growth buttons for each other a little bit, is that fact that we're, you know, it's the strength and conditioning, but I think also you guys are really very clearly into trying to promote being better human beings also. And so it's been really cool to have that relationship. Definitely appreciated.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So I would certainly encourage any of our listeners, before we go on to our topic today, we'll let everybody know what your URL is, where they can find out more about the services you guys are offering.
Sure. So our website is www.tri-hard.com. And we can be reached through that site. We're historically low-tech folks, so we're not currently real active with any kind of social media or anything. Hopefully that will change in the future, but you know, feel free if anybody has questions to either pick up the phone and give us a jingle. Numbers are right on the site, or email, also right on the site.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Well, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you, or the primary reason I wanted to have you on the podcast today, was to talk about your system of metric triangulation as it relates to evaluating intensity for the athlete, you know. And I can certainly, you know, as a coach, one of the challenges working with athletes and helping them to determine how they're doing, how they're feeling, are they moving, training, riding, running, swimming at an appropriate intensity at that moment in time. It's really challenging for the individual athlete because there are so many metrics. Some are objective, some are subjective, and then with the advent of so many new toys that we have available to us now, sometimes those things, whether they be a GPS Garmin-type monitor or a power meter or a heart rate monitor, take us out of our body a little bit. And while they give us some kind of number, the idea of connecting all of these metrics, utilizing them all in concert with each other, I think is what the basis of this triangulation, a system that you guys have developed, is really all about. And I really, really dig it. I really think you've done a great job of organizing it. So I thought, hey, I'll bring you on and we can talk about it in more detail. So if you would, Will, kind of go over how you guys came up with this particular system. I think the triangulation word is really cool, by the way, because, you know, it really does create a connectedness, right, between these three points in time and allow for an integration, and connectedness is really what it's all about, certainly for us in the movement biz, but also as it relates to the individual athlete assessing, you know, how they're doing at any moment in time. So give our listeners a little background about it, and we'll go from there.
You know, it's funny because I would like to say that this was like a great stroke of genius that I've been doing for, you know, ever and ever with this great name on it and all that kind of stuff. The reality is it's only been in the last few years that we really put a name on there and kind of formatted it so that it was not sort of delivered piecemeal over time. And what I mean by that is, you know, if I looked back at workouts that I had done and the ways that I had approached doing workouts, or, you know, talking to Jason about how he might have approached doing workouts, and then I considered how I tried to teach people to utilize different tools that they had or simply to execute high-quality workouts, it started to hit me that, you know, there's relationships here between these things, and it sort of seemed intuitive to me. And it almost like, well, doesn't everybody know this? And so I think everybody does know it. It's just a matter of we get a little sidetracked because we'll look at one thing utilizing, or look at measuring intensity, for example, via one particular type of tool, or we'll have a tool that does a whole bunch of things, and we start to get a little bit swamped by that information. It's sort of like the training concept of chronic load syndrome, you know, where you've got all these things happening and all these inputs, but there's not enough difference between the inputs, so it just becomes white noise. And it almost felt that was what was happening to me. You know, or not, you know, within coaching, you'd try to explain how to do a workout and somebody would kind of feel like they didn't understand how to break up the intensities or what do I do? So I'm in the middle of doing this workout. My heart rate is X and my pace or my power is Y if I have those variables handy. And it feels like this, but I don't understand. How do I adjust? And the problem with coaching in this kind of a format, really for endurance sports in general, not just, I mean, you know, probably 99% of the actual coaching we do, 95% maybe, is via distance. So I'm not there with the athlete. And even if you could be with the athlete most of the time, if they're in the middle of a workout, you know, they're doing hill repeats or whatever it happens to be, you can't be right with them the entire workout. You just can't physically do it for all the athletes that you're going to coach, even if it's only two or three people. So how do you help people understand how to take these inputs, this information that's coming in, and allow them to adjust somewhat on the fly, and then to a greater degree adjust their training program overall? And so part of it to me cycles back to a really basic thing, which is straight up perceived exertion. It's kind of gotten a bad name. You know, it's almost like, I think some of it's generational maybe. You know, I'm not old, but I'm old enough that I still remember what it was like to train on feel, you know, and to trust that. You know, whereas I think a lot of people now, especially younger people coming in, or just folks that are maybe a little more early adopters of technology than I might be, they tend to be really quick to say, you know, I got to have this metric and that metric and that metric, and that's how I'm going to do everything, and kind of forget about, well, what does it actually feel like? So the RPE end of it, which is really a way of sort of assessing how all the potential fatigogens you might encounter during a workout are going to interact with the, you could say, the starting power you had, if you will, you know, the motor size initially, what your fuel level was and how the temperature was and, you know, how fit you were, how fresh you were, those kinds of things. And so how that balance evolves, not just over the workout, but over multiple weeks or days as well. So the idea, if I kind of stop myself from getting a little too excited and going off on all kinds of tangents, I'm prone to doing that, so don't be afraid to throw out a lasso every now and then if I go a little crazy.
Right. Hey, you and I are of the same ilk. We could be talking an hour and a half from now.
So you just get excited. It's cool stuff, man.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
So anyway, you know, you've got these metrics coming in, and well, when you look at power output and you look at heart rate, you know, those things relate in a certain way. And although, yes, I would say that power is a more precise way of measuring what you're doing, heart rate still has some value, and it's giving you some information about how that workout is progressing and how you're feeling, say, if you look at it from one workout to another. Likewise, perceived exertion is going to do a similar thing. In some ways, I would argue if you can be very self-aware, perceived exertion is going to tell you what's going on sooner than just about any other metric you could look at, because it's taking into account, exactly what your body's encountering and how it's evolving within a given workout and over a period of workouts. In other words, over a training phase or, you know, a particular microcycle or mesocycle, however you break out your training. So cycling it all back to right, you know, is the intensity metric triangulation idea. It's basically just a concept of saying, okay, well, if I'm at this power output and I'm at this, you know, heart rate on the bike, for example, what does it feel like? If you're running, maybe it's pace, heart rate, and what does it feel like? If you don't have a pace meter, you don't have a power meter, okay, maybe it's just heart rate and perceived exertion. You know, we're trying to ballpark your pace based on, you know, good old-fashioned clock and a measured course. And then you're basically comparing that to perceived exertion throughout the course of that workout or workout to workout. So if you, you know, the perfect example would be that, you know, you consistently are doing a given workout, and when you start this workout, for example, you know, your power output is going to be targeted at X level, and your heart rate usually happens to be around, we'll make up a number, say 135 beats per minute, and it feels like a 5 on a scale of 1 to 10. Feels totally cool. And you find that your perceived exertion and your heart rate stay pretty similar when you're doing that, but your power output is slowly going up, then great. You know, this is cool. Everything's copacetic and you're cruising. Conversely, maybe you're doing an interval workout and you're 3 or 4 intervals into that work set, and you're starting to notice that your perceived exertion is going up and up, and your heart rate is no longer climbing. If anything, it's starting to come down and your power output's going down. Maybe there's something else going on. You know, should you stop the workout? Should you continue the workout? Is there something you should do after the workout? So that's really what this is about. It's trying to give people sort of preemptively an idea of, okay, how do I adjust? How do I manage these kinds of events when they happen? And, you know, am I low on fuel? Am I getting too hot, or am I dehydrated? If these things happen, should I totally stop the workout? Should I just reduce my intensity? Those kinds of things. So it's trying to give someone an idea of how they can kind of preemptively cut those off, if you will, or move forward better if those things start to happen.
A couple of things that, you know, that you said that really I find very interesting, Will. You know, and I guess from my perspective, when I look at your system as you've laid it out for me, I think it simplifies everything quite a bit, right?
That's the idea.
People, sort of some instant feedback, if you will, about how they can make a better decision in any moment in time. You know, like you as a coach, I find myself occasionally saying to an athlete that what you really need is more experience, because as you put more workouts together and more weeks and more months and even years, you start to develop a better sense, or what I think of as an intuition, which is definitely connected to that rating of perceived exertion. And with that experience, you hopefully can make better choices and better decisions. But your system and your chart really, you know, really helps people make better choices and decisions without necessarily having those years of experience. I think that's really cool.
That's the idea of coaching, though, right?
Yeah,
and that's what people get help from us for, you know, is to shorten the learning curve a little bit.
Shorten the learning curve.
And it's funny, I say it that way. The reality is you can shorten the learning curve to a point, but ultimately you still need years to, you know, to really see all that learning come to fruition.
Yeah. Well, great racing is about, you know, smart decision making, right? In the moment, you know, and those decisions that you're making at any moment in time, you know, do I need to drink more or drink less? Do I need to go harder or not so hard? Should I stop or should I continue? Those are, you know, or, you know, conversely, could I go harder? You know, can I push myself a little bit more? Sometimes that's the thing that comes most from experience. I, like you, am the kind of coach that always starts with RPE, and we do that here with our team. And a lot of folks, and again, I have a sense you've experienced this, especially for those that are just much more comfortable with the gadgets and the toys. You know, that, and I'll use heart rate monitor as an example because it's been around the longest. You know, it's an accessible tool that a lot of athletes can get their hands on. They're not terribly expensive. And as soon as they get that heart rate monitor, they have this sense that it's going to tell them something in and of itself that they really need to know. And what I inevitably do is draw folks away from that number and come back, if they can, back into themselves, back into their bodies, get a sense of their breathing, their overall effort, and then start there, and then, of course, connect that with heart rate, understanding the limitations of heart rate, such as that it lags behind effort or that it may be reflecting many other things. Of course, those other things are important in the big picture as well. So,
in essence, what you're doing there is, you know, it's the fancy little intensity metric triangulation explanation that I had shared with you, and you're teaching it to people before they know they're doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's essentially what's happening there.
Sure. And again, like you said, good coaching.
Right on.
So what do you think, conversely, what do you think some of the limitations are for this system? I mean, as you think about it, and you guys have presented it to the athletes that you're working with, and by the way, I'm going to ask you, I'm not going to ask you to share it in its entirety, but if you could
provide... Oh, I'm happy to. If somebody, two things. One would be, you know, we're talking about it in sort of overview, sort of macro scale here. If somebody just wants to see the little document that we use, I'm happy to share it with someone. They can, you know, they can drop me an email or whatever, and I can send it to them. I don't know. I guess that we're sort of we were open source before there was open source. I mean, I'm going to my minimal amount of internet knowledge right there.
Right.
But it's you know, coaching information and training information. To us, it's sort of like, hey, I mean, I guess occasionally there's some weird proprietary thing, but for the most part, it's stuff people should know and would like to know. So get it out there. So that's cool with that, and you know, for sure, if people would like to see that. And then the other thing I was going to say was that in about a little less than a month now, we're actually doing a seminar on all the ins and outs and details of this topic at the TriMania seminar or expo in Boston. So we'll be the opening seminar there, and really diving into the very sharp details of this. So if somebody's going to that and they would like to check that out, it'll be, I believe it's at 9 or 9:30 in the morning. I should know that, but you know, it's the first seminar of the day there. So
right, is that that's now a 1-day seminar right up there in Cambridge?
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a possibility I may still be speaking that day.
That would be great.
It hasn't been formally, the whole thing hasn't been, you know, zip tied yet, but perhaps I may see you there anyway.
That'd
if I'm
great.
Not speaking, and even if I am, I may be the guy sitting in the front row trying to understand what you're saying.
Too funny.
You know, back to my earlier question. So do you think there are any limitations with this? I mean, as you think about it, what are some of the limitations you think that folks might be need to be aware of?
You know, the number one limitation, you know, as with anything training related, is individual variation. You know, I mean, we're all unique individuals, and certainly there's, to a degree, a level of, you know, I'll call it universal adaptation, meaning, you know, if somebody's exposed to an exercise stress, they're going to have some fairly predictable changes. But the degree to which those predictable changes occur is going to be different for each person, and how much stress they need up front and how that level of stress changes over time for them to adapt is going to change. So, you know, with something like this, there may be one person who is a little different, or who, you know, their body responds a little different to what they're doing. Or perhaps, you know, one person can handle more fatigue than somebody else. Or maybe for one person, fatigue accrues a little differently than it would for somebody else. So in those situations, they're going to have slightly different responses. And, you know, my stereotypical answer would be, well, that's where coaching comes in. It's that conversation between the coach and the athlete to figure out, are you the person who responds this way, or are you a person who responds that way? So that, you know, to me, that would, those kinds of issues would be, you know, the limiter number one. And number two, at least with the charters we've been talking about, it, to me, the next limiter there is that, you know, it's not covering absolutely every possible scenario. It's the most common ones, the ones we see most frequently, but not every possibility. So it's, you know, certainly possible somebody could do a workout and say, well, it's not falling into this neat little chart. So what do I do now?
Right.
And again,
right.
You know, because we've, you know, we haven't organized this as a necessarily a universal tool. This is really for the people, you know, we've used it historically for people we coach. Because of that, you know, at least in terms of this specific document, it's, you know, that's where the coaching becomes amplified, and how do we figure it out? The concept, I think, is fairly universal, but the specific application becomes more individualized based on how a person responds.
Right. Yeah, I mean, those are two really, really good points. You know, certainly you and I often have discussions with athletes where we really ask them to be more aware of any individual trends, things that they may tend to see come up routinely, and at a more fundamental level, learn more about themselves, understand themselves as much as they can with our objective help, in theory objective. That's a really valuable tool for every individual athlete to really just get to know themselves a little bit better. And and then obviously your second point is awesome as well. I mean, there are many possible scenarios that can occur at any moment in time. It's, you know, we wish it was black and white. You know, somebody becomes dehydrated on the race course, or, you know, or they lose energy, or all of a sudden, you know, they stop, you know, completely having the need to urinate, or whatever, you know, I mean,
right.
Or, you know, or the opposite. And we wish that there was a simple way to just plug in, you know, a black and white answer that we knew we were going to be right on every single time.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever, you know, I'm drawing a parallel here in my head. It's almost like, you know, sometimes people would like certain training related issues to be 2 + 2 = 4, but most of the time it's almost like a large scale epi study, you know, looking at just this massive group of people, and there's so many potential inputs that the study's output, although it might be really interesting and it could be very good, sometimes in the scientific community it's viewed a little like, oh, I don't know, I mean, you know, how precise is that really measured, and, you know, it's,
yeah,
who knows. Now, personally, I kind of look at that. I like epi studies. I feel like it's a big group of people. There's probably some trend that makes sense there. But that's because I sort of enjoy living in gray world as opposed to black and white world. And your statement there initially, it made me, you know, like I said, you'd like to think it's 2 + 2 = 4. But in reality, if you've ever looked at a, you know, like an equation to figure out different power outputs for a similar size rider over a certain type of terrain, the math is crazy. You know, you've got all these inputs.
Yeah,
that's more like what actual training and racing is like. It's just a bunch of inputs and some kind of output. And it's really almost universally. I mean, if you have 25, you know, if you had 25 inputs, you would be getting some meaningful change in the output from all of those. And there's more than 25. So, yeah, it's never black and white.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, you know, Will, on a training note or a coaching note, if you will, and this is just something I figured would be maybe perhaps helpful to some of our listeners. You and I, as coaches, spend a certain amount of time encouraging athletes, prodding athletes to keep better notes, right, to keep a log. It doesn't have to be necessarily highly detailed. You don't have to write a book with every single day's training. But a lot of what we're talking about here is just people being aware of those trends as they occur. You know, and I could use a taper as an example. Some athletes do wonderfully with a reverse taper. Others do wonderfully with more of a traditional taper. How important is keeping those good training notes when race week or race month comes along? If you really have a good sense of what's worked best for you, at least you can eliminate some of those variables, huh?
Yeah, it's huge. And, I'll use a mistake to explain one of the ways that was really made sharp for me, which is, it's probably something a lot of coaches, especially when they're young in this field, do. you get high on what you believe is the best way to do something sometimes. And I can remember working with a gentleman who is
I love that. You get high on it.
Yeah, you do. You know, you kind of think, like, this is a great idea. This is so cool. It couldn't possibly
absolutely.
Be anything wrong. You know, nothing else could possibly work, right? So I was working with this guy, and he was a hair over 50. I want to say 51 or 52. And had a very good history, you know, had Kona qualified several times and, you know, very strong guy. And I had in my head that we were going to do this kind of taper. And, I, you know, point blank, it's long enough ago, I don't remember the exact details. I just remember it was different than the way he had tapered in the past. And it basically, the end point is it left him flat. And there's no doubt in my mind that that was a huge part of the problem there, was that I, you know, the way we set up the taper just was not appropriate for the kind of load that he had been doing. And based on how he had best tapered in the past, meaning, you know, what had worked really well for him in the past. And it's funny how that experience, which point blank stunk, I would like to use other words, but I, you know, this is going to get broadcast, so those words will stay in my brain. You know, that experience really, it sharpened for me that this whole concept of individuality is more than just lip service. It is very legit, and it is really something you need to look at, whether it be a new person that you're starting to coach or a person who you are coaching, what has worked really well for that person historically, because chances are those kinds of things are the places where you're going to find everybody. It's funny. Everybody wants to work on weaknesses, which are really important to a point, but I think we focus so much on those weaknesses that we actually become weaker in the stuff that is good. And oftentimes the weaknesses are small inputs that don't have big outputs. Sometimes it's different. Maybe they have a major biomechanical issue, something like that, but you know, it's one of those, like, you're an iron distance triathlete, your anaerobic capacity is a little bit weak. Why are we spending months working on your anaerobic capacity? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Just an easy example there. So it's like, you got to kind of balance that out. And so, like, in the case I was talking about, you know, it's just, had his taper been a little bit more, sounds funny, but his taper, if it had been a little more intense or a little bit more dense in terms of how the workouts were spread during that period of time, he probably would have had a much better performance at his race. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't what we wanted it to be. And so, you know, that's just an easy example, and you kind of get the, you know, smack in the face of, you know, you might have good ideas, but if you've got a person who's got good notes over history, over a period of time, it's like having a really thorough medical history. And it, you know, it's a lot easier for someone to look at that and say, well, X, Y, and Z are what's going on, if you can really look at that and see what's been occurring over a period of time. You know, I'm kind of flashing back. Hopefully this doesn't mess up the flow of conversation, but you had been
good stuff.
You know, folks with, I forget exactly who said it, but something about, you know, the way they maybe get a little too attached to devices, or that, you know, they want to just say, you know, what's this heart rate? Like, I got this heart rate monitor, so it should be telling me everything now, right? And I'm sure this, you feel this way too, or you've experienced this feeling, but it's almost like when somebody sends me a data file from a power meter or a Garmin device or whatever, race file, workout file, whatever it is, even if I know what they were supposed to do that day, there's nothing I like less than receiving a file that's just literally an email. Hey, Will, here's my file. And it's like, great. I have no idea what this felt like.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You could have done this workout.
Dude, I get that multiple times a day. And
it's brutal,
all of the athletes that, you know, that I work with are all listening, and they're going, yep. And then I follow up with an email and go, okay, so how about a little bit more info here? You know?
Right. I could send you a file right now too, and you could probably tell me the same things.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's just like you need that history to better understand what's going on. And that the same thing with something like a log. And I tend to agree with you. Maybe I'm touchy-feely. I don't know. I kind of like it when somebody has a little bit of an explanation for, I want to know, like, what's your daily stress level? Like, how do you feel you wake up in the morning, you know, you've been awake for a few minutes. How do you feel walking up and down the stairs? Like, that kind of stuff. You know, how are you feeling from a general energy perspective, to me, is really important. And then, you know, some basic physiological stuff and things that can be helpful over time. But I definitely want to know, when you did your workout, what did it feel like? I mean, it sounds corny, because people, I think they feel like, if I hire a coach and they're telling me to do 6x4-minute intervals up a hill, then they know exactly what that feels like because they told me the intensity. It's like, well, I know kind of what it feels like, but I want to know, like, did you feel progressively more tired as the workout went on? Did you feel like, you know, you were able to execute the last one as well or better than the first one? Did you feel like you could have done better with more rest intervals? You know, like, this kind of stuff, that's the stuff that really can help you execute workouts better. And if you're doing individual workouts better, the odds are your overall training picture is better, and then your race performance is better. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's all exactly. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, it's a funny thing because, and the athletes that are listening right now, I'm sure would nod their heads. I mean, every one of us sees the world through a different lens, and I know sometimes with athletes, they're afraid or reticent to be very honest for fear of being judged or for fear of having failed the workout or those kinds of things really inhibit an individual athlete's growth and their ability to get on a better page with the coach, you know. And so, you know, a lot of the energy is oftentimes spent, at least speaking for myself, on helping people to be okay, you know, with the process of learning and training. There's no mistakes, there's just learning. And part of that is really open and honest sharing, you know, to allow that individual athlete to grow and improve from whatever that, you know, experience may have been. And but it's not always easy for everybody, right?
No, that's hard. I mean, it's really hard. That's really hard. I mean,
yeah.
You know, and it goes both ways as well. I mean, you know, even within a single relationship between a coach and an athlete, or, you know, whatever the relationship might be, but, you know, over time, there are largely in a coach-athlete relationship, the coach is providing the leadership and the learning. There are times where something that occurs for the athlete actually changes the coach. Like, you know, the example I just had is one for me, but, you know, almost any relationship that you have with an athlete can change in some ways how you go and coach people down the road. I used to use an example. You probably heard me use this actually. I'm trying to think of a couple of different seminars that we've done the same, like a coach training seminar or something like that, that we were both presenting at. So we were in the audience at the same time. And, you know, the idea that, like, okay, so you're working with an elite person. There's stuff that you can use with the total newbie soccer dad who's, you know, just getting into triathlon to lose some weight. There's some crazy stuff that you can actually take from that elite guy and bring to him. Conversely, and I think more surprisingly to people, there's stuff you can take from that new guy who's totally new to the sport and bring it to the elite person and cause benefit for them. So it's, you know, there's definitely a huge amount of, if you can be open with where you are at and communicate well with your coach, or at least with yourself if you're self-coached, about how, you know, how you're feeling and where you're at with your performance and what you've been doing workout-wise, it does make a big difference in terms of what you're able to accomplish.
Yeah, sure. No question. Great stuff, Will. Thanks for sharing that. That's awesome. I'm going to sign off now. Let everybody know again how they can get in touch with you to perhaps chat about your services or maybe take a peek at your metric triangulation chart.
Sure. Probably the best way to go is will@try-hard.com. Can I give a phone number? Is that cool?
Absolutely, man.
Okay.
Absolutely,
so, my offer is 978-466-5151. And I'd be happy to talk about it, whether it be coaching or just some general questions about the intensity stuff that we talked about initially, or really any area of endurance sports performance. It's just fun stuff to talk about. So
that's
certainly
awesome.
Open to that.
And, yeah. And everybody as well, if you're in the Northeast and you're able to get up to Cambridge for the expo, I believe it's Trimania.
Mm-hmm.
What's the URL? I know Mark will be very appreciative that we're able to share this as well, too.
Yeah, let me just take 2 seconds. I'll pull it up really fast. Can't remember off the top of my head.
Just doing a Google search on that as well, I'm sure will provide some good information. There's some great speakers, a lot going on.
Yeah, it's the easiest way I can think to get there is just going to sunmultisportevents.com.
Right.
And amongst Mark's races, which are awesome, there's some really fantastic races. I know it's a slightly different course, but I am forever grateful that he brought back the Fairleigh Triathlon. That was the first triathlon I ever did. So when I saw it come back on the calendar, I thought, oh, that's totally awesome.
That's awesome. Is it the same course?
No, it's not. It's actually a lake over. If you remember that the old course that had the run around the pond and all the little campers out there,
yeah,
I mean, it's totally awesome.
Lake Maury is an incredible lake, and that was a pretty challenging bike course, as I remember it as well too.
I'll tell you, it's probably a ridiculous story, but I remember your first triathlon swim story, and it's kind of similar in some ways, I think, to mine. My wife was like, at the time we weren't married, but she was like, you know, you're a good cyclist. You should try triathlon. She had been into it for a few years. So literally, I grew up a cyclist. That was my universe. Cycling, you know, cross country skiing in the winter, but it was a factor of like getting better at cycling and that kind of a thing. So she says to me, you should try triathlon. I'm like, well, I don't really, I can get out of a pond or, I can make it to shore if I fall out of a boat, if it's not that far, but I really don't know how to swim. And she's like, don't worry, I'll teach you. And she had a swimming background. So in my like 2 weeks of lessons, I showed up at that race in Fairleigh, my massive biker tan. I think I actually did the swim wearing nothing but bib shorts. I freely, like, people can just kill me now for that one. I remember getting about 100 yards out, looking down into the blackness and thinking, it's going to be really hard for them to find my body. Simultaneously, what made me think of this, your comment about the bike made me think about it, though, because somewhere after the first buoy turn, something clicked in my head, and I will freely admit this is not a good emotion to race on, but it went from I'm going to drown to I'm going to pass every single one of these people that passed me on the swim, which was probably about four waves by that point.
And you did, or pretty close.
I probably did, but I passed a lot of people. I don't remember exactly how many. It sounds very crazy to say that way, but I definitely had a good bike that day. That was a cool race. So it just felt good to see Mark had done that. And definitely, the Trimani event's awesome. So it would be, certainly there's a bunch of good speakers, like you said. There's always so much cool stuff to check out, and just the energy to kick off your triathlon year is fantastic. So.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Mark and his entire team, whether it's the Patriot or any of the other events that he does, they do an absolutely fantastic job, really, really good. And the expo reflects that same kind of awesome organization and just positive energy all the way around. Really, really good.
Totally.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us on this edition of the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. I want to thank my guest, Will Carusis from TryHard.
Thank you, Al, and everybody for listening.
Yeah, awesome. By all means, if you have any questions or comments, contact Will, or of course you can follow up here on our blog. We absolutely appreciate you spending some time with us, and we'll look forward to connecting with you in the next edition of our podcast. Have a great day, everybody. We'll speak with you soon. Take care, Will.
Take care, Al. Have a good day, everyone.
Thank you for tuning in to the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating and review here on iTunes. Be sure to head over to PursuitAthleticPerformance.com to subscribe for free tips and strategies to help you get strong, get fast, and unleash the amazing athlete in you.